After experiencing a few delays due to weather earlier this month, the Great Lakes Museum has officially announced that the SS Keewatin, the oldest Titanic-era passenger ship in the world, is set to arrive in Kingston on October 23, 2023 at 1 p.m. The museum invites those interested to welcome the ship on Monday afternoon at the site of the museum on the historic Kingston Dry Dock, and anticipate tours set to be offered in spring of 2024 after the completion of remaining refurbishment work on the ship. After the arrival of the ship, Kingston will be its permanent home for the foreseeable future. CFRC sat down with Chris West, Museum Board Chair, earlier in the fall to learn more about the museum, its history, and the arrival of the Keewatin. Start us off, would you like to introduce yourself and maybe give some details about your role at the Great Lakes Museum?
Well, my name is Chris West, and I'm the chair of the board of directors at the Great Lakes Museum. And I've had the great privilege of doing that for the past 10 years and a bit more. And it kind of grew on me, I suppose you could say. I'm very excited about the progress we've made. It's been a tumultuous journey as the chair, as you may know, or some of the listeners may know. We were evicted from our National Historic Site waterfront property, the Kingston Dry Dock, in 2016. And I mean evicted. We'd been there for 40-some years, and we were turfed out. And we were tenants of the federal government, and the federal government said, well, this is no longer an essential federal property. It's surplus. We would like somebody to buy it. Well, a developer bought it, and he didn't need us. So this is one of the reasons why I've had a rather lengthy tenure as the chair. Some might say overly lengthy, but it's hard to get new fresh blood on a board when the institution's very, life itself is threatened. So we were in an existential crisis for a few years, and through the extraordinary generosity of a great Kingston benefactor, Britton Smith, we were able to buy back our property from the developer. And in 2019, we moved back in. The place was in a shambles. It had been totally neglected and allowed to deteriorate very, very badly. And ever since, we've been the phoenix rising from the ashes. We got this precious National Historic Site back, and volunteers and staff have been extraordinarily motivated to turn this institution around. And if you go down there, Christine, and have a look, it's the place just sparkles. It's fresh. The gardens are the best they've ever been. The exterior and the interior of this building that was derelict. No running water, hot, cold, no light, no electricity, flooded out here, there, everywhere. Now it's just a sparkling jewel on Kingston's waterfront, and we're very, very proud to be custodians of the Great Lakes Museum today, and with all its potential for where we're going in the future.
For folks who are maybe unfamiliar with the museum or interested in learning more, what can they expect to experience when they visit the museum today?
Well, part of this rebuilding exercise, of course, is to populate our great gallery spaces with exhibits again. But as you can imagine, working through COVID and now coming out of COVID, we've had to raise hundreds of thousands of dollars and invest thousands and thousands of hours of labor, much of it volunteer labor, just to refurbish and make these gallery spaces usable again. We're just getting to that stage. And now we have a fantastic exhibition on drawing on the World War II Merchant Navy or Naval Reserve portraits of Kingston's famous portrait artist, Grant MacDonald, from the 40s, 50s, 60s. He died in the 70s, I think. We have his wartime collection. And we put an exhibit from this World War II era in one of our galleries, and it's a gem. And it's fun. It's got something for kids of all ages, including adults. You can dress up as a tickle trunk, and you can see if you qualify to join the Navy as a volunteer recruit, that kind of thing. And so that's the first class exhibit that we've mounted since getting our space back. And we're now working on the pump house, the historic pump house, which houses the state-of-the-art late Victorian era steam pumps, steam-driven pumps that would pump out the dry dock to make it a dry working space to work on the undersides of ships that would pull into the dry dock for servicing. So we are in the process of interpreting that space. It's a fascinating space. It's the raison d'etre of the dry dock is that you can have this ship servicing capacity, but it's only possible with these massive steam pumps. So you've got to explain, here's where the boilers were, here's where the coal came in, this is where it was burned, this is the steam generation power that was created to drive these massive pumps that could drain the dock very, very quickly. It had to be done quickly. All of that is in the process of being explained, interpreted, and made into a fascinating space for our visitors. So that's step two in this journey of repopulating the gallery spaces. Step three is that over the winter and in the spring, we'll be creating an interpretation exhibit space for the Keewatin, or the Keewatin, as we now pronounce it, excuse me. And this will be our Keewatin visitors' first exposure to, well, why was this ship built? Where was it built? What was the historical context? What was happening in the world at that time? Oh, it was built in Scotland. How did it get here? How did it get in through the locks into the Great Lakes? Well, in fact, it had to be cut in two and floated in two pieces to get through the locks. So all of that kind of backstory why was this ship running a route from Georgian Bay up to what we now call Thunder Bay in Lake Superior? What was that all about? Oh, it was owned by and operated by the CPR. Well, what was the CPR doing in the shipping business? Well, it was more efficient rather than through the rail line through Northern Ontario, which was very rough and unpredictable and difficult to manage. It was a smoother and more economically efficient part of the journey to do it by water. And remember, there were no roads back there. This is before the great highways and the Trans-Canada system had even been conceived of. So these ships, and the Keewatin was one of a number of ships from different lines on the US and the Canadian side that were transiting the same routes and carrying goods and passengers in both directions throughout the Great Lakes. In the case of the Keewatin, in the early days, many immigrants who settled in the prairies arrived in this fashion. They may have landed in Quebec City or Montreal and eventually made their way by train to Port McNicoll, the rail terminal there, and then continued their journey by ship all the way up to the Lakehead, and then got on CPR again and headed out west. So there's a whole lot of Canadian history tied up in the Keewatin, and you can't just tell all of that as you're being guided through the ship and your jaw is dropping in awe at the grandeur of it. It's really grand. It's like a movie set.
Wow.
No, you need a quiet contemplative space where you've got this exhibit onshore, where you can grasp some of this contextual information first. So that's the interpretive exhibit. And that's the third one that we're working on. And that's a big, big job.
West also discussed the name and logo change the museum underwent earlier in the fall, prompted by the arrival of the SS Keewatin to the museum.
I think it was tinkered with once before, a long time ago, let's say maybe 30 years ago or so. Mm-hmm. The logo consisted of some wavy bits as we still have now. But there were six of them, and it was, to me, it looked like a mustache if you kind of backed away from it, on top of the name Great Lakes, Marine Museum of the Great Lakes at Kingston. We thought our marketing group and communications committee and then the board thought, well, we're never going to have a chance again like this one with the arrival of the Keewatin to refresh our brand, to do a rebranding that perhaps would be very much in keeping with where the museum is going and expanding our horizons a bit. With some of this contextual background I tried to convey to you and our audience listening in, it becomes apparent that the Keewatin is a story about the entire Great Lakes and even beyond. It fits into Canadian history and European history. And so we wanted to perhaps expand our scope without diminishing in any way our essential mission and purpose, which anybody can Google, but our mission is to connect people to the Great Lakes and to preserve and tell its stories from the past and the present and projecting into the future. So by simplifying the name and making it Great Lakes Museum rather than the Marine Museum, which might make some people think, oh, you're mainly interested in the ecology of the Great Lakes, or you're mainly going to be telling stories about the Marine Museum of the Great Lakes at Kingston, but not so much perhaps beyond. The board, after much work had been done, heard some recommendations from the committee, and it made powerful sense to all of us. And the board voted resoundingly to make this change for the reasons I've articulated, or I've attempted to articulate. But a broader scope was a big part of it, and a simplification of the brand, getting back to the mustache of the wavy bits. a wonderful volunteer, recently retired branding consultant and designer, John Charette, on our team, he just removed one of those whiskers from the mustache and repositioned them a bit so that there were five of them. Now we've got five Great Lakes symbolically in the logo. And now when you back away a bit, instead of seeing a mustache, you see what looks like a pennant or a flag waving from a vessel.
Yeah.
That's the impression that we wanted to create. So it's not a revolutionary change in the logo, it's an evolutionary one, but we think it's more on brand, if you will. And supports the notion that we have stories to tell about the entire Great Lakes Basin and even beyond in both directions, whether you want to think where did Keewatin come from originally, Scotland, Europe, what was happening in the early 1900s in Europe, and why were these ships built? There were some thousands of them built, Christina, and there are only two or three left in the world today. only tour, and this is one of them.
Finally, West also provided details on where to keep up with the Great Lakes Museum and put out a call to volunteers.
Well, the website is the first place to go. www.marnuseum.ca, MARNUSEUM.ca. And we have a presence everywhere in social media that you would expect. So Facebook, mm-hmm. Instagram, X, previously known as Twitter. I may be leaving out a couple of the other ones, I'm not sure. The first place to check would be the website. Our volunteer base has grown exponentially in the last couple of years. People are excited, but I want to emphasize that we have capacity and we could use many, many more volunteers once the ship arrives. It's going to be, you know, it'll just be like a magnet. But I encourage people, anyone who might be interested in volunteering in any capacity with the Keewatin, drop down at the museum, have a chat at the reception, we'll definitely follow up with you and see if there's a fit that might be of interest.